couldn't make a living in Russia. We lived in Kiev. Abhavaya Ulitsa, that's the name of the street. And we lived in a basement. He could not make a living. He had three children, three daughters, and my mother couldn't do anything there. In Russia, you don't know from these things. We used to go to Taich. A Taich means a river. We used to go there and wash our own clothes by the river, and we used to cook, not by gas, but we had their kerosene. This is how we used to live in Europe. That's the European life. Of course, things progressed there. It's different now. So naturally, my father was here quite a few years, and as he was here, naturally, we three daughters, we grew up, you know, got bigger. I was the youngest one, 9 years old, and he wrote to my mother that he wants to come here. We had a very hard time getting here. Too much money, mama couldn't have. My grandfather, he was a son of a bitch. He gives nothing to my mother. He gave us nothing. Used to come on Friday night. She used to wear a white wig. And I used to take off the wig every Friday night, and I used to louse her and crack the lice. And she used to give me a little glass of semichkis. You know what semichkis means? Poly seeds. This was my reward, because I used to clean her head. This is how we lived for years, and my mother slept on a tapcham. It looked like a coffin with a hard board and straw under her head. And us, she used to give pillows with blankets on the floor. We used to sleep on the floor. And my father, we used to write to him. He knew everything what was going on. He had nobody in Russia. No brothers, no sisters. He had nobody there. So what happened? He kept on, "Don't worry, I'll lend the money. When you come, we'll pay it out. We'll do something." And he wrote us the letter, and he sends us the Shifkarten. That's the tickets to come to America. He knew if he comes to America, a friend of his was here. And he wrote him, he says to him, "Yossel," he says, "you come here." He sent to him, he says, "Yossel, I'll help you on. Send for the familia, and you'll see how you're going to become." And it was really very true. This man, this friend of his, helped him out. And this is how we came to this country. We opened up our eyes. All right, years ago, when you made $20, $25, so many years back, 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago, my God, you think you're a millionaire.
I was born in Vilna in 1907. I had a very happy childhood. We were kind of well-to-do. My father was a distributor of liquor and beer to 27 small inns in the neighborhood. And we lived in a house that was pretty primitive. It had none of modern conveniences. There was no electricity or telephone or running water. But in a way, it was comfortable. We had good furniture, we had good clothes, we had good food. And it was a happy childhood. But by 1914, the First World War broke out in August. And we became poor overnight because the business was liquidated. No liquor was allowed to be sold. We began suffering the fate of all people who lived through the First World War. I came to this country in 1921 by way of Canada. We were supposed to come to my grandfather, who lived in New Haven, Connecticut. But when Harding won the election, the new immigration laws came in, and the family could not get a visa, so that my father and I went to Canada, and the rest of the family stayed on in Vilna. And we went to Canada, and because after living there for 2 years, we could come into America. He left in the first decade of the century for the same reason that most Jews in Russia left. It was religious persecution. It was a poor standard of living. And it was the dream of a new free land. By the time we got ready to come, we couldn't come. So we went by way of Canada, my father and I. My mother had died when I was 9 years old because of lack of medicine. She developed a fever that today probably would have not been as serious as it was then. And just because we could not get medication, she had died when I was 9. I became a child actor in Europe. When I was a child, I have a vague remembrance. I don't know whether my grandfather may have come to America when I was a year old, or maybe I just having heard the talk about it and having seen his picture. But to have a feeling that I had known him, you know. And there was always talk about America. And then as conditions got worse during the First World War, and famine, and disturbances, and the fear for your life, and also being Jewish, and as a child being afraid that the Gentile boys would send their dogs at us, we lived in constant fear. And the need and the hunger years of the First World War had such a devastating effect on us that America became a very powerful dream. To us, America was the promised land, that we don't have to wait for the Messiah. All we have to do is get there. I remember in 1919, there was a pogrom that lasted 3 days. We always lived, our doors were, we had shutters on the windows. Our doors had those iron bars. We locked ourselves in at night. When armies came back and forth, they'd always take pot shots at every house they passed by. In those periods, we'd sleep on the floor. We've lived in always in constant danger. But I mean, it became almost like your way of life. The disappointment of waiting months and months for the visas to come through. But by the time that we got the visas, and even though the family got separated, it was a very, well, it was almost like, I imagine a man in jail must feel, upon release must feel the same way. Because of our desire to be in America, life there has become our prison.
I came from Warsaw, Poland, to the United States to see the World's Fair. My father was a successful businessman. I studied dentistry, and I have very bad memories about my last years in college. It was a terrific anti-Semitism. For 4 years, we were sitting on one side of the class, and the Polish students were sitting on the other, and we did not talk to each other. We knew that fascism is coming into Poland. My father never planned about leaving because he made a comfortable living, and he thought that somehow he will survive. When we grew up, finished high school, and we were supposed to go to college, my brother couldn't enter any college, and he was sent to France, to Sorbonne, to study. I got into dental school, but it was 4 very unpleasant years of studying. For 4 years, we didn't have access to any laboratories. We had difficulties in getting equipment, getting corpses and whom to work, and they made difficulties even during the exams for us. We had to be really much better than the average student in order to pass an exam and succeed. In Poland, it was practically a numerous clauses, or you had to be really very, very good to enter a medical school or a dental school. And when I graduated, I was very happy to go out for a holiday to the United States. And in 1944, I find out that my father and mother perished in concentration camps, father in Treblinka and mother in Majdanek.
Well, life in Trinidad, as we put it this way, rich gets richer, poor gets poorer. If you do not know something to help yourself, and if you got a big family, you got to fight it hard and real hard to help your children. It is not like here, that where you can get help, that there are societies or whatever they call it here, can assist you with the kids. Here, your kids can still get a free high school education in the public schools. But back home, government secondary school, we got an examination which we call common entrance back home. It is a must. Your kid have to pass that exam. If he or she passes it, they get through in a government high school. Then they get their education 5 years high school free. Then, if you're interested to send your child to a private high school, which every parent, I guess, will love to do it for their children. But if you are poor to the extreme where you cannot afford to send your kid, your child remain without this high school education. If you could afford to send your kid in a private high school, pay for them, well, then your child can get a secondary education otherwise. I love my kids, and I know what is education today. If you don't have it, you suffer. And if you can help it, and you have the opportunity to gain it, my advice is to everyone, gain it. Wasting time is no sense.
One of the most poignant things that I remember as a child was the fact that I had, in a short time, bridged a number of centuries in the course of a few years. My poor parents couldn't do the same. My parents still lived in that social world which was medieval Spain. We knew nothing else. Continued those traditions that we brought with us, because living in a Muslim world, we could not mix with the Muslims. It was a kind of culture that did not permit the blend of the European, of the Greco-Roman Hebraic world and the Ottoman Muslim. We simply could not do it. The result was that my parents and people like them continued all the mores of medieval Spain. And here my parents also continued the same traditions with minor alterations. But for us children, it was different.
My father, to some extent, from what I have heard, was like some other Greek immigrants in his time, and in some respects, different. He came from a peasant village on the island of Cephalonia, which is one of the Ionian islands on the west coast of Greece, not too far from Italy. He came from probably the lowest strata of the socioeconomic scale, and he had nothing beyond a third grade education. He came to the States, I think twice. He came once before World War I, then was drafted by the Greek army during the Balkan Wars and returned to Greece, and then came back to the United States sometime after World War II. I don't quite remember the date. He came to the United States because he thought that he would not have the barriers to social and economic mobility here that he obviously had as a peasant village boy in an island in Greece which had no opportunities whatsoever.
I'm an immigrant, I guess, only in a technical sense, because I was about a year old when I came to this country with my parents, who had lived for a number of years in London, where I was born. They came originally from Russia, from the Ukraine. They were working class people who lived in a little village near the city of Kiev, which is the capital of the Ukraine. As a matter of fact, the two of them were born and lived the first years of their lives in little villages not too far from each other. their history was like the history of most working class people. They went to work when they were 11, 12 years old. They both went to work in dressmaking shops. Then, after the terrible pogroms in the early part of the century, they took part in the enormous wave of emigration. They fled from Russia and landed in England, in London, where they lived in the poor section, I think it's called the West End, and also worked in the garment industry. They came into London sometime in 1910, 12, somewhere in there, and they became part of a small group, I think a small group, of anarchist socialists, which was very active in England at that time, an offshoot of the anarchist or radical movement of the Jews in Russia, in Tsarist Russia. And after a number of years living there, they left London and came to the United States. I remember, for instance, on the occasions when they would meet with friends whom they had known in the old country, and they would compare the experiences of the young men of that time and the way they had cut off toes and things like that in order to escape becoming soldiers in the Tsar's army, because the prospect of a Jewish soldier in the Tsar's army was not a happy one. Or stories of, on the day of the physical examination, swallowing a pound of tobacco, for instance, that kind of thing. I remember those stories. I remember hair-raising stories of escapes across the border, running out of Russia.
I do think that there's more political freedom in the States than there is in France. Something like Watergate, for example, with where a scandal is blown apart and people who are responsible for it, at least some of them, will go to jail, is unheard of in France. You know, there are scandals every day in France, and people simply say, well, you expect that of politicians and so on. Whereas in the States, people have been told for centuries that this is a perfect country where everything, the land of freedom, and they would naive enough to believe it. I don't believe that it was true. But anyway, this gives them an edge when a scandal occurs that they're shocked and something happens. The Constitution also is strong, which is not in France. It's not as much respected.
I live in front of a ship, a horrible ship, for 500 people, indeed 2,000 with them. And the captain was a Nazi, and we paid $1,000 a ticket. And he didn't give us any cabins. He put us down in a hole, in a real hole. It was no toilet, nothing there, absolutely nothing. So we took all our belongings, we traveled to the Budapest quarter together, and we slept. It took us 24 days from Portugal to New York, and we slept on the deck. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, the sailors would come and wash the deck, and they washed us, and they washed our belongings, everything. 3 days before we came to New York, Richter had a brilliant idea. He made a wonderful picture of the captain of the ship, and the first violinist of the quartet made a concert. After this, they gave us 3 cabins first class. And for the first time, we were able to wash ourselves and sleep in a bed and dry out a little bit, you know?
I was born in County Clare, in the west part of Ireland. My father was a sergeant in the RIC, that's the Royal Irish Constabulary, and a staunch supporter of the British. But all he wound up ever doing was raising a bunch of rebels. He made us rebellious because of his strict attitudes on everything. I never called him Pop or Dad. It was always yes, sir, no, sir. And that was it. I was raised in Cork City and educated there at the North Monastery. And I have only a vague recollection of the Sunday of 1916, when after coming out of Mass, I saw a bunch of fellows, 50 of them, at the Volunteer Hall in a place called Shear Street in Cork. And there was a friend of the family's, Tighe Barry, marching up and down in front with a shotgun. There was about 50 of these volunteers there, and half of them were carrying broomsticks, and the rest of them shotguns. They were to march out to Macroom, because there was supposed to be a ship coming to Bantry Bay with ammunition and rifles. And I remember I followed them out as far as I could. The rain came down in buckets. I figured I'd better get home, because if I came home drenched, my father would wallop the hell out of me. What that demonstration in Shear Street was, of course, I didn't know. I was just a kid at the time, 10 years of age. But later on, as the years went by, after 1916, the volunteers began to develop. In 18 and 19 and 20 and 21, my older brothers had joined the IRA. And in 1918, I joined, and it had to be secretly, what was known as the Old Fianna, which was the junior arm of the IRA. After we were in that organization, there was somebody who used to drill us. Gradually, we learned how to throw rocks at trees. And as we became a little older and stronger, they gave us dead grenades to throw. They were very hard to throw because they were called Mills bombs. They were a big grenade. And I became a pretty good shot with a Smith & Wesson. Many times during the years from 18 to 21, my brothers were on the run. And I'll never forget in 1917 when I read or heard about the king in Russia being shot, I was delighted. And I'd have been much more delighted if it was the British king. And we used to go around smearing walls with slogans of "Up the Bolshies." And we didn't know a Bolshie from a whatever you might call it, but that's what they were called. They were called Bolshies, and they're the ones that got rid of their king in Russia. When the truce came in 1922, our family stayed with the diehards. We disagreed with the treaty, totally and completely. And then in 23, my brothers got locked up and put in jail. By 1924, I was thoroughly disgusted with Ireland, sick and tired of it. In 1925, I graduated from the Crawford Technical Institute as a mechanical engineer. And, of course, belonging to a diehard family, there was just no hope of getting a job. And I had a brother who was a marine engineer, and he was out here in the States. And finally, I decided, this is no good. I've got to go somewhere and put my talents to some use. And I decided to come to America. There was never any thought of any place else, because our family, on my father's side and my mother's side too, my mother was born out in Illinois, had a tradition of emigration. I had great-granduncles that fought in the Civil War, three of them with the South and two in the North. There was two of them left after the rumpus was over. There was one that fought in the North, one for the South, and they joined that Irish Brigade that invaded Canada. Then I had three or four uncles out here, so it was a natural thing for me to decide to come to America.